That evening, as they made their first beaching, an incident occurred that puzzled Burton. Kaz had just stepped ashore among a group of curious people when he became very excited. He began to jabber in his native tongue and tried to seize a man standing near. The man fled and was quickly lost in the crowd. When asked by Burton what he was doing, Kaz said, "He not got, what you call it, it," and he pointed at his forehead. Then he traced several unfamiliar symbols in the air. Burton meant to pursue the matter, but Alice, suddenly wailing, ran up to a man. Evidently she had thought he was a son who had been killed in World War I. There was some confusion. Alice admitted that she had made a mistake. By then other business came up. Kaz didn't mention the matter again, and Burton forgot about it. But he was to remember. Exactly 415 days later, they had passed 24,900 grail rocks on the right bank of the river, tacking, running against wind and current, averaging 60 miles a day, stopping during the day to charge their grails and at night to sleep, sometimes stopping all day so they could stretch their legs and talk to others besides the crew. They had journeyed 24,900 miles. On Earth, that distance would have been about once around the equator. If the Mississippi, Missouri, Nile, Congo, Amazon, Yangtze, Volga, Amur, Huang, Lena, and Zambezi had been put end to end to make one great river, it would still not have been as long as that stretch of the river they had passed. Yet the river went on and on, making great bends, winding back and forth. Everywhere were the plains along the stream, the tree-covered hills behind, and, towering, impassable, unbroken, the mountain range. Occasionally the plains narrowed and the hills advanced to the river edge. Sometimes the river widened and became a lake 3 miles, 5 miles, 6 miles across. Now and then the line of the mountains curved in toward each other and the boat shot through canyons where the narrow passage forced the current to boil through and the sky was a blue thread far, far above and the black walls pressed in on them. And always there was humankind. Day and night, men, women, and children thronged the banks of the river, and in the hills were more. By then, the sailors recognized a pattern. Humanity had been resurrected along the river in a rough chronological and national sequence. The boat had passed by the area that held Slovenes, Italians, and Austrians who had died in the last decade of the 19th century, had passed by Hungarians, Norwegians, Finns, Greeks, Albanians, and Irish. Occasionally they put in at areas which held peoples from other times and places. One was a 20-mile stretch containing Australian aborigines who had never seen a European while on Earth. Another 100-mile length was populated by Tocharians, Logu's people. These had lived around the time of Christ in what later became Chinese Turkestan. They represented the easternmost extension of Indo-European speakers in ancient times. Their culture had flourished for a while, then died before the encroachment of the desert and invasions of barbarians. Through admittedly hasty and uncertain surveys, Burton had determined that each area was, in general, comprised of about 60% of a particular nationality and century, 30% of some other people, usually from a different time, and 10% from any time and place. All men had awakened from death circumcised. All women had been resurrected as virgins. For most women, Burton commented, this state had not lasted beyond the first night on this planet. So far, they had neither seen nor heard of a pregnant woman. Whoever had placed them here must have sterilized them, and with good reason. If mankind could reproduce, the river valley would be jammed solid with bodies within a century. At first, there seemed to be no animal life but man. Now it was known that several species of worms emerged from the soil at night, and the river contained at least 100 species of fish, ranging from creatures 6 inches long to the sperm whale-sized fish, the river dragon which lived on the bottom of the river 1,000 feet down. Frigget said that the animals were there for a good purpose. The fish scavenged to keep the river waters clean. Some types of worm ate waste matter and corpses. Other types served the normal function of earthworms. Guinafra was a little taller. All the children were growing up. Within 12 years, there wouldn't be an infant or adolescent within the valley if conditions everywhere conformed to what the voyagers had so far seen. Burton, thinking of this, said to Alice, "This Reverend Dodgson friend of yours, the fellow who loved only little girls, he'll be in a frustrating situation then, won't he?" "Dodgson was no pervert," Frigate said. "But what about those whose only sexual objects are children? What will they do when there are no more children? And what will those who got their kicks by mistreating or torturing animals do? You know, I've regretted the absence of animals. I love cats and dogs, bears, elephants, most animals. Not monkeys, they're too much like humans, but I'm glad they're not here. They can't be abused now. All the poor, helpless animals who are in pain or going hungry or thirsty because of some thoughtless or vicious human being. Not now."